From theunts.com, this is The Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com.
Real talk again. I am the bad man. I will speak my mind every time and I will tell it. Everyone done know say rude boy business. I run things out of road. But don't bother victimize innocent people. Them, you understand? Step back.
Hello and welcome to the Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is Dominique Rowland, better known as MC Zulu, a major figure in Chicago's dancehall, dubstep, electro, reggae, and Burning Man scene. Zulu's been producing and singing on top of some of the most cutting-edge tracks produced in the Windy City for a while now. On October 4th, his new album, Electro Track Therapy, comes out and goes worldwide on the internet the next week. Today's episode is brought to you by DJ Tech, offering a wide array of tools for live production, studio programming, and everything in between. They've got state-of-the-art mixers, USB turntables, amplifiers, CDJs, and all sorts of gear and accessories. They're on the web at djtechpro.com. Let's get to the interview with MC Zulu.
What did they say? Zulu!
You and your sound are such a product of your past. Let's start at the beginning. I understand you were born and lived for a while in Panama?
Exactly, yeah. You know, I was born to one Panamanian parent and one American parent, so from day one, I've been pretty much a mix of the cultures.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. And once you came to Chicago as a youngster, this must have been around the height of Chicago's very unique and central house movement. Was this the first electronic music you were exposed to, or had you been exposed to some of the sounds of Central America or maybe even different U.S. trends?
Well, you know, you don't realize when it's happening, but my parents kind of were very open-minded. They took me to see Midnight Express as a kid.
Oh, okay.
That soundtrack, man, had a real profound experience on me just, you know, listening to it. I didn't realize then that was my first exposure to electronic music because Giorgio Moroder is the guy who was creating all these different sounds, I guess, in his lab using oscilloscopes and just different type of machinery and making it into music. And that's where that sound came from for that soundtrack. But if you take it like from the standpoint of being in Panama listening to that, then, you know, we're also listening to local radio, which has a lot of Bob Marley and things like that on it. And, you know, it just became a mix. From day one, I was kind of a mix of electronic and Caribbean culture.
And I wonder, when you were a child just moving to Chicago, were you trying to blend in or figure out what it was the trends of the time and sort of become a seamless member of U.S. culture and Chicago culture? Or were you still picking up on some of your parents' open-mindedness and still exposing yourself to the Caribbean culture and the Central American culture? What did you find you were listening to and doing to either blend in or still retain your identity?
Well, you know, you go to a different place, you're always a fish out of water, you know?
Yeah.
So I go to this very affluent neighborhood in Chicago and, you know, I'm talking, you know, the way I talk. And, I also knew Spanish really well. But, you know, I was subject to a lot of cruelty and bullying and stuff like that. And, you know, it's not to say I'm not playing the victim card, because right now I have to let you know I don't hold grudges or anything like that.
Sure.
But I did become a product of that, you know, a product of the bullying turned me into a bully. At first, I was just being whoever I was. But, you know, after a while, you start to conform a little bit because you're tired of being made fun of. You know what I'm saying? So I learned how to talk. I learned how to talk like the people who live there. It's no problem for me to do that at all. I can do that all day long.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, at the same time, I also listened to the music they listened to. I was open to a lot of classic rock. And also, you know, I was bombarded by Chicago house because it was in the seminal period then.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it was more of a mixture of the different musical cultures. Always, it comes at you in the way of music. You don't really know what it is you're going to like or anything, but it hits you. It hits me from that standpoint, you know, and it's not necessarily a matter of how you dress, how you act or anything like that. But the music was always kind of a retreat.
Absolutely. Now, I wonder, because in the Caribbean culture, a DJ is actually what we call an MC here.
Yeah.
And then the selector is actually the DJ. When you are exposed to both hip hop from the States and then whatever was coming at you from the Caribbean, still, you know, even as you're getting older, what was it that spoke to you and said, I'd like to rhyme, I'd like to be an MC, I'd like to be a rapper? Was it music, or is it embracing your culture, or what exactly was it that pushed you in the direction to put you where you are today?
So I was basically, you know, conforming to my surroundings and just mixing in, you know, trying to figure out my identity, mm-hmm. as it were, like every kid does, no matter where they are. You know, these guys, man, they were pretty rich. So they would go on vacation to Jamaica and they'd come back with these tapes like, hey, do you know what this guy is saying? And you know what he's saying? You know, I know you kind of come from that area. What's he saying here? And the first one that had a real profound effect on me was Tiger. And it was a song he did called Ride Pon Rhythm. And it's absolutely a manic song, man. He just sounds completely unhinged on that song. And for some reason, I was able to understand what he was saying. You know,
it was just natural.
Yeah, it was like, man, my dad talks like that when he gets mad. That's what I was saying. Yeah, it was no problem. And then, you know, more tapes started coming through, more friends going on vacation. That's how music traveled back then, you know.
Cassette tapes, yeah, little cassette singles, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, we just made friends on that common ground. Like, man, I'll bring you all this cool music. But I never even thought that I would have a chance to sing it at all.
No lies, girl. Again, I would tell you I have the worst intentions tonight. Remember, love is heart and soul. Love is heart and cold. Love is heart and soul. I want you feel it.
Why call it love, love, love? That's such a heavy thing. It's like we want control. What use are those declarations when all your desires unfold? With no reason or no rhyme, look around and all you find indications of the price we pay. Still I got you on my mind. I know love is not a crime, but I'm trying to break some rules today.
All I want to do is run. Let me turn you on before the chance is gone.
Let me turn you on,
girl, you know it's been so long.
Let me turn you on,
we can work it till it's done.
Let me turn.
From MC Zulu, produced by Chrissy Murderbot. You seem fairly schooled in the styles and the sounds. Can you give our listeners a crash course in what's been happening in reggae and dancehall? Here we are in the 80s and then into the 90s, and how those sounds now have even changed.
Yeah, dancehall really is, to me, when I hear it as a student of the game, I hear Bhangra, which is Indian music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I hear very prevalent in most Caribbean music, is a background of Bhangra. And as far as the structure is concerned. But what happened was, I guess, you know, Kool Herc, who was Jamaican,
sure,
started seeing what the rest of the Caribbean was doing with the sound system situation. And he emulated that, you know, that's much talked about in the parks of New York, throwing parties and stuff. And I don't know, as far as reggae culture is concerned, it's always been a kind of an imitation of American culture in the context of how they would do it. So even the emceeing from day one, when you would hear guys say, flip this one on your musical, this, it's the number one hit, you know, things like that. They were imitating radio DJs that they would pick up in Miami, you know?
Sure.
And eventually they started putting that to music, because I guess they are musical type of people. But, you know, I think really it started being an, you know, imitation of what they heard and evolved into its own thing.
And then since that 80s dancehall came out of the reggae scene and you started coming across these tapes, what sort of changes did you see taking place? Obviously, the music of Jamaica is going to Jamaica, Queens, and the Bronx and influencing the hip-hop scene, and then it gets passed back and forth and back and forth over and over again.
Yeah.
And then there in Chicago, they had this very, you know, centralized house scene, and it was very unique to the city and sort of kept within the city walls, more or less. What happened when you started seeing that blend with the other styles that spread from there, like juke and footwork, a lot of these things that were coming up around the time that you were young and impressionable and trying to figure out your own identity?
Well, you know, I started to see, there was one guy, I have to give him credit, called Maximilian, and he's still doing things now, but he was the first one who I heard really take the house and reggae and mix it together. You know, so it became something to me that, you know, seeing him do that, that became a viable lane. You know, it's true. It's good that you made the point about these scenes affecting one another back and forth, because that's what it is. Everybody's, no matter who you are, you start off imitating what you like, and then you find your own voice. You know, sometimes while you're imitating, it's good and it's valid, but other times it's garbage. Like for me, the first albums that I was doing, you know, when I was imitating the Shaba Ranks and, you know, Bura Bantans and Buja Bantan, it was pretty much garbage. I have to admit, like, the early MC Zulu stuff is horrible. But after a while, I found my own voice and it became valid. And you know, because that's when you start to get a fan base and start to, you know, express yourself on a worldwide basis. It becomes self-expression. But all art, I think, starts off, a lot of it starts off as imitation.
So let's talk about those early days. How did you make that jump from listening to it and studying it to, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, grabbing your balls and getting there, up there on stage and actually trying to do it?
Participating, man, I don't know. You know, at first I wasn't going to. I was a lab rat. You know, I like to make music. I like to play instruments or figure them out and lay them down in this studio. And that's what I was doing. I was an intern at this one studio called Smooth Sounds. And they also worked with Trax Records. So I met a lot of people running their sessions, and sometimes I would sell them tracks, because that was a way to make money in Chicago. Let's say like early to mid 90s, you could make some money just making a house track and selling it off. You know, but you don't talk about who you sell it to. So I never did.
No.
Yeah, you don't do that. It was a contract. You just live up to it. But it was a good lane for a long time. It never occurred to me until, you know, somebody said, "Man, why don't you sing on some of these tracks?" And it was like, "Nah, I'm not really a singer." You know,
but you're a big guy, you got a deep voice. Yeah. You got the sound of this.
That's pretty much how it was. Like, man, no, really, I think you could do something. But I didn't think I could do something. Then, you know, after a while, I tried. That person, by the way, was Farley Jackmaster Funk, you know. And I was in the studio with him as early as 1993.
Hot Five.
Yeah. So I laid down something with him and, you know, never really heard back from him. I have no idea what he did with it. he could have released it overseas and just didn't hit me back or whatever. But it started something right there. Like, okay, I guess I can do it. You know, if he thought enough to at least bring me into the studio, Streeterville Studios, I was so impressed. But, you know, that was also my introduction to being an MC, even though not much came of it.
So you're imitating the Buju Bantans, the Shaba Ranks. You take on the political slant of much of your influences that they incorporate into their music. What are some of the ideas and issues that you choose to focus in on? And was this, you know, you felt like you were obligated to because of the style and the music has always been political, or were you, you know, growing up, you know, semi-military family, cross-cultural background, were you just not all about making party music like maybe some of your contemporaries, but a self-aware and also aware of the greater social context that this music could take on?
Yeah, it was more of that, I have to say, because when I call myself imitating someone, you know, and I might be the only artist to come out telling you I was doing it, but I was imitating the style not necessarily the or the sound, not necessarily the philosophy. The philosophy from day one was mine. You know, I felt like this kind of music, the reason it spoke to me, the reason I wanted to participate is because this kind of music was, you know, a social outlet. You know, it's something where you can actually say something and affect people. And it can be done in such a way where it's not boring. Because I heard a lot of message raps before. Message raps, sometimes it just gets to be overwhelming with the message and it's, you know, not fun anymore. But people from the West Indies, we have this thing where we are worldly and at the same time, we're always aware of social injustice. You know, when you combine that with the thing of being, you know, living in America and being streetwise, then you kind of have a total package. And that's what, you know, I pretty much have tried to be. That's what the guys in New York are. They're streetwise and they still know. They still know that, they, you know, what goes on as far as social injustice is concerned. And, you know, that comes forth. Every so often it might peek out in the music. Some people don't give a damn. Some people just think that, you know, they want to have a good time or they're just doing it for the money and that's fine. And some people are totally political to where they start, you know, disliking this group or that group. You know, I'm in the middle of that.
You've admitted to being somewhat cynical and somewhat wary of some social movements or some philosophies, but you still stick to, you know, your call to arms, spreading the word.
Yeah, man, you can do a lot of good with music. You can do a lot of bad also. I mean, how many people, you can't blame the musicians, but how many people have heard these songs and you just feel like, yeah, man, I'm going, you know, whatever. Whatever the song is telling you to do, you know, sometimes you can get caught up in it. And music is very powerful, even though somehow they have devalued it in recent years. But it's very powerful. Otherwise, you wouldn't use it. You can see music in everything. Commercials, movies, you know, background TV shows. If it was not a commodity, it wouldn't be so prevalent. It wouldn't be used so much. But, you know, knowing that the power of music, you also have, you know, somewhat of a responsibility at some point, I think, to, you know, at some point declare what you are. You might not be a positive person, so I can't tell you to say something positive. But I am cynical, and I'm, you know, kind of aware of what people have gone through in the United States and around the world. But I don't want to shove that down anybody's throat. I don't think that's something you want to buy. You know, I don't feel like a Black Panther, you know, type of militant or level of militants. But I also am not a conformist. So you kind of walk the line between the two, you know, extremes, and you find your own self-expression.
Much in pain, alongside the Batman, Zulu. Calling out to all the sexy ladies that aren't y'all there. Hey, gun power, barber line, they love the white. All right. All the hot y'all, your barber line, they got the moves, they love the white. You know? All the hot y'all, your barber line, they got the moves, they love the white. All right. All the hot y'all, barber line. Now here's what I want y'all to do.
The radio listening, 99 for the streets are going to this, 939 hot girls visiting, good to be living the life,
good to be living the life,
1030 looking long at the telephone, sitting up in a me one room in the alone, evidently I'm a joke to this little girl, she stand me up all night, me fresher than the average girl, but in a flash like so sudden, girl underestimate, look just like sheep on the top when they realize that then it's far too late. Me a bad man, murder microphone all across the world, but I'm the man this time. Imagine how surprised she see me on the spotlight, and that's about the night just.
Roll back, roll back, roll back, roll back, roll back. That are you from the chat, brother? Roll back, roll back, roll back, roll back, roll back. You never know, say your chat, that's right. Roll back, roll back, roll back, roll back, roll back. Was only man take me back, yeah. Roll back, roll back, roll back, roll back, roll back. I'm gonna respond to that. Yeah.
I'm a victim of the broke down economy. Me no really care a damn what you say to me. Yeah, give the woman everything that they came to see. Watch us be light the fuse.
Watch us be light the fuse.
Should I open up the eyes?
Roll back from MC Zulu, produced by none other than Mochi Pat. So, let's talk about your new album, Electro Track Therapy, which comes out next week and then worldwide the week after. First of all, how does this album demonstrate an evolution in your sound from your Crowd Control EP, which came out earlier this year and which was, for the most was part of a remix album. What sort of mind space does this record speak to? Where was your head during the creative process?
I really wanted to accomplish a few things. I wanted to highlight the producers who have, you know, been working with me in the past 2 years. I've been able to reach around the world with these guys, you know, and hit up so many different, what you would call scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it explains the sound of the album, because there's no one sound. It's not a dubstep album. It's not a drum and bass album. It's not, you know, anything. It's more experimental dancehall type of album, you know? So not only am I experimenting with the sounds and the different production styles, but I'm also experimenting with the delivery and the vocal styles. It you know, it has to push you in that direction. Once you start getting things that people are not familiar with or not necessarily listening to all the time, you know, I might be the only one singing to some of these kinds of tracks right now.
Absolutely. And not only is your delivery system, the way you rhyme, your cadence and your flow with these beats, but also these producers aren't dance hall producers. They're off doing their own things, be it drum and bass, dubstep, footwork, juke, whatever. I mean, these artists are taking a shot at, you know, what they think electro, reggae, or dancehall is.
Yeah, they're on their own lane. And, you know, some of the tracks were made without even having reggae in mind. Like, I got one from Chrissy Murderbot, and I know he did, you know, he just sent me tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, a lot of them just sent tracks. I think Lion Dub is the main guy who does dancehall. DJ Lion Dub, he out of New York, he's done a lot of stuff with pretty much every single reggae singer. If you ever go to a Lion Dub show, you'll hear all of them shouting out his name with these specials and dub plays that he's done. But yeah, these guys, man, they all have their own lane. And what I've done is kind of infringe on their territory.
It's funny because, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Chrissy Murderbot. He has been exploring some of these styles that are ubiquitous in Chicago, but, you know, maybe unheard of elsewhere. And then, you know, he's done a lot of projects with you in the past, which is really interesting because, you know, he comes in and produces a track for you, and it's almost vastly different from his own repertoire, but also in line with his experimental nature.
Yeah, man. I mean, a lot of these guys, they can do anything. I think, you know, there's not one producer here where I could just, you know, tell them, listen, I need a straight up dancehall track, and they couldn't do it. But, you know, they're into their own self-expression. With Murderbot, he is a huge beacon for the city of Chicago right now. You know, he is making sure that people know about his influences. And that's why, you know, that's why I have a lot of respect for him and keep working with him.
Absolutely. And the first time I saw you was actually with Radio Hero. Tell me about your relationship with Radio Hero, a big collaborator of yours.
And Radio Hero is kind of the man in Chicago. His lane is kind of is the Burning Man type of scene and, you know, things around there. And, you know, there was a time when I was welcomed to like one of his parties. I was actually on the list. I went up to the door. And by the way, he throws just the biggest parties in the city that are Burning Man related. And, you know, thousands of people come out to these parties. I walked up to the door and I looked at all these people, the way they were dressed and things like that. And it was just like, wow, these people will never in a million years understand what I'm doing or get me. You know, I just, you know, I had that misconception just looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I always say it because I always tell people, I kind of owe them an apology for that, because you never know. That's the group that has accepted me the most in Chicago. And they were familiar with the work that I've done before I even got to the door. You know, that Radio Hero was playing Ransom the Senator and, you know, Bodywork and different tracks that I had done before I ever met him. And, you know, as far as his crowd is concerned, I think they're more like family. It's the Burning Man crowd. And, you know, every time you go there, you feel just, you know, it's kind of rejuvenation, and you have more faith in humanity because you're dealing with all these people that are just so nice and they're like family, you know.
Absolutely.
And Radio Hero is kind of I don't want to say the leader, but he's the beacon for that in Chicago and the surrounding areas.
That's great.
Really nice guy, by the way.
I'm sure as well. And finally, Kush Arora, who's been behind a lot of Bhangra and Raga and future-based projects. How instrumental has he been in your career and to your sound, not only producing tracks for you, but also distributing and labels and all the work he's done with you, you know, from the beginning?
When, you know, Kush Arora is kind of amazing kid, he was actually on the panel of people who invented the MP3 when he was 17. That's how far, that's how far back in music he goes. And when I first heard his music, I didn't understand it at all. It was just, you know, things coming out of the blue, just different sounds that didn't conform to any structure or a pattern or anything. And for years, he was just like, no, man, you're a great lyricist. And, you know, I got these tracks, I'm going to do something. But he had to do it. And because I didn't know how to write to his tracks. But after a year or two, I started to understand. So I think Kush is one of the guys who really opened my mind on, you know, how to approach this type of music, because it's not traditional in any way, shape, or form. And anything goes as long as you keep the vibe. But it's hard to recreate. This music is more difficult, the electro, you know, reggae-driven music, because of the amount of influences it has. It's more difficult for the average consumer to understand, you know. And a lot of people wouldn't understand, how can you have Kush Arora and then Radio Hero, then, you know, Mochi Pet and Murderbot all on the same album. But it was because of the influence that I received from Kush, really, that I was able to do it. I was able to hear these different sounds and see what would be valid, you know. Now, as far as the music business is concerned, he's helped me with distribution and, you know, introduced me to so many other artists, actually Top Billing, you know, who is also on the record. And it just became like a lot of his links became friends of mine.
That's fantastic. He is, you know, a seminal figure in the industry. Tell me how you got involved with gold medalist Usain Bolt. That had to be a thrill.
I should tell you a huge lie, okay?
Okay.
I should tell you a huge sensationalized story. But
Please do. You were in a foot race with him.
Yeah, and I beat him.
And you beat him, and so he had to be on your track.
Exactly. It was like, look, man, you know, I'm not going to have this. Like, you're so famous, and, you know, I can actually run faster than you. So you need to use my music, at least, and I won't tell anyone. No, really, Puma just hit me up. What can I say? They're like, wow, we like this song. Or actually, it wasn't we like this song. It was, can you write a song for this? And I was like, fine, but I'm not going to sell it to you outright. I'll write it for you and license it, but I'm going to use a version. And they took AC Alone and put him on the song. And, you know, that was actually through the producer, Bionic, who made the track. You know, so it was just the usual standard industry. You know somebody who can do this, do that type thing.
That is still a story. And you can make one up and it'll be even better.
I got three more stories for that, but I'll tell you later.
Do you see yourself in the future getting behind the controls and producing tracks, or is the role of MC where you feel most comfortable and in charge?
MC is more, it's done a lot more for me. But at some point, yeah, I got to start producing again. I might produce my whole next album. We'll see.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, people throwing so many tracks. It's hard to just make time to do it. But
yeah,
I can do it.
Do you have plans to tour behind this album, or is Chicago just the place to be right now as far as cutting-edge electronic music?
I can't believe everything is going on in Chicago. It's ridiculous. I spent the whole summer here doing shows and actually, you know, turning down a lot of stuff. But yeah, Chicago's, like, blowing up. I'm really proud to see people doing that. There's another group, Makers of Sense, who are doing things out of Chicago. They did that Electric Avenue remake on the album. That's, you know, nice work that they're doing, man. But right now, Chicago is the place to be. But I will... You have to go around, you know.
Yeah.
At some point, I'll set up tour dates. You have to.
That's fantastic. We're looking forward to that, and we're looking forward to the album Electro Track Therapy. Dominique Rowland, MC Zulu, thanks so much for being on the Unz podcast.
Hey, much respect, man.
It's like so many before me have said, right now, rhythm hold high and high. Universal peace and love extend to every nation. Spread the word across creation.
That's going to do it for this week's Unz podcast. Special thanks go to my guest, MC Zulu. His new album, Electro Track Therapy, comes out October 4th and goes worldwide October 11th. Remember, for the best in DJ gear and accessories, visit djtechpro.com to check out the vast array of mixers, workstations, and toys for DJs of all stripes. That's djtechpro.com. This week marked the beginning of the annual Unz Challenge. Please visit theunz.com/theunzchallenge2 for all the information. If you produce electronic music, you don't want to miss out on this opportunity. Win tickets to see Anasia, Screamin' Benga, Pretty Lights, Amon Tobin, Yodo, and Kilowatts by visiting theunz.com/contests. Please visit theunz.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. and go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the Unz podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at Anand@theunz.com. Join the conversation at the Unz podcast on Twitter.